Hello and welcome everybody to another episode of the World's Greatest Podcast. It is, of course, That's the Way the Cookie Crumbles. And as you can tell from a distinct lack of mouth breathing, Jim is not here this week. He's on one of his business trips, in inverted commas. Stan, do you want to tell the listeners what he's up to?
Well, he's obviously Manchester City's number one lawyer, allegedly. Not that we know what they would need a lawyer for, but Jim is the main man that they send across to Abu Dhabi and all around the world to help fight any legal battles that they come across. And at the moment, there are rumours that there's going to be a Premier League spend cap, with Man City being one of the three clubs that voted against it. So I'm sure Jim's doing what he can to try and get that, to find a loophole in the spend cap, so to speak. But another team who found a loophole was Arsenal, and it was set pieces against Tottenham Hotspur that undid them, particularly in the first half, where the game finished 3-2 with a kind of a Spurs fight back, but it was never really on it. You know, it looked a lot closer on paper, I think, in terms of them getting something in that second half. But the game finished 3-2. Arsenal were 3-0 up at half-time, and we watched this one together, and it was a weird one, really. We said we don't really know how it's 3-0 because nothing's really happened. I think Arsenal were just so clinical, and it was two set pieces and a really easy Saka goal coming onto his left foot that was the difference by half-time. But how important is this win for Arsenal, considering this is the one on paper that was probably the hardest fixture left for them?
Yeah, I'd probably agree with you there. If Man United were still fighting for European football they actually wanted, I'd probably say that the United away game coming up was probably that, given that Spurs at the minute are just so inconsistent, you don't really know what you're going to get with them. And then the polar opposite with their North London neighbour and Arsenal, who are just ever consistent, and they consistently are scoring goals this season. And they fixed the problem from last season, which was scoring that and doing it without a conventional striker, which is all credit to him. It's very Guardiola-esque from Arteta there. But yeah, I think this win was huge. I think Spurs were so embarrassing, given the actual status of this game and what it means to the fan base and bragging rights and how big a game that is in that part of the world. And I think they really let themselves down. Like you said, 3-2 really flattered Tottenham, I thought, because I thought they were incredibly poor. I thought the lack of big chance creation in that game for Tottenham was really apparent. But yeah, I think huge result for Arsenal. Very embarrassing on Tottenham's behalf, but credit to them. The two set pieces, and no one was an own goal. Really, really poor from Spurs again on the set pieces, but credit to Arsenal. They put a lot of stock in this set piece coach, and it's proved dividends over the course of the season, with them and Everton, I believe, scoring the most from set pieces. So credit to them. But yeah, really, really poor from Tottenham. I'm really not impressed with them. And I think Ange Postecoglou, Stan, at some point does need to answer. And I think that a lot of people are saying that his lack of plan B, and this was a subject in our group chat, and Postecoglou didn't actually feature in this conversation. It was more De Zerbi and Ten Hag. But Stan, does Ange Postecoglou have to answer for his lack of plan B?
Yeah, I think so. Although I suppose compared to Ten Hag and De Zerbi, he's done the best out of the three, but he's also not had any European football like the other two have had, and a lot less injuries too, although Spurs have had key injuries. They've not been for anywhere near as long as Brighton and United, or as ruthless, should we say. But he's done the best out of the three. But yeah, I would say they're a weird team, Spurs, because as much as I wouldn't want to play them, because they can be very annoying and all over you, they're also easy to play against, if that even makes sense at all. I think they've got... there's very simple ways to hurt them. Set pieces one, counter-attacks the other. I mean, I'm thinking of two games, top of my head, two London derbies. Okay, they had nine men, but Chelsea picked them off 4-1 because they were so high up. And Arsenal have scored three, and two of them were set pieces where, you know, contact was made with the ball inside the six-yard box, because Vicario was stuck to his line on both times, an own goal and a Havertz goal. So I think, despite them being, you know, really hard working, and they do have goals in them, they've got a load of goals in them, they've also got really obvious weaknesses. And now, look, you can say Ange needs to sort that out, and look, he might do. It's only his first season, and if Spurs end up finishing fourth and qualifying for the Champions League, then it's been, you would have to say, really a successful season, considering I don't think anybody would have put Spurs in the Champions League positions. But it remains to be seen whether, you know, in a year's time, he does figure out how to stop them being so vulnerable on the counter-attack. I mean, how many times have we seen Spurs concede the first goal and end up turning it round to win it just at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium this season? It feels like they've had a load of 2-1s, but they've scored late winners after going 1-0 down and set pieces again, undone them at the weekend. So we'll see, give it, you know, best part of a year, end of next season, will we see a Spurs side that's a lot harder to break down and a lot sturdy off set pieces. We'll see if they are brilliant. If they're not, then that's when you start asking questions that he's had two full seasons and the same issues are there. But for Arsenal, they're doing absolutely everything they can. Probably a shame for them, Everton-wise, not so much United, that they're up against City in the title race. I think if it was an Arsenal-Liverpool title race, they would have 6 points guaranteed travelling to Goodison and Old Trafford. A couple of dodgy back passes and a few trips up in the penalty box, a couple of Højbjerg own goals as well, maybe. So a few headers in from corners and they'd be guaranteed 6 points there. But, you know, Everton might not be too fussed. But we'll speak about it later. Everton are safe. It's the last game of the season. Season there. Will the Everton players' heads already be on that Ibiza strip? We'll find out. And like I say, United season's done for, apart from the FA Cup at the end of May. So could be a nice little run of fixtures, unlike City, who again, on the flip side, have to go to Spurs, but Spurs might roll over for the sake of Arsenal not winning the title, but they've got a lot to play for. They could still be maybe a win away from really pushing in for fourth. They might be in fourth, they might be in fifth. So Spurs, if the mentality that we keep seeing from Ange, that it doesn't matter who they're playing and all this, the mentality about winning that he wants to set, I can't imagine Ange telling them to roll over for that City game at home, despite it obviously potentially leading Arsenal to the title with a game or two left by that point. So some huge games coming up, some rivalries directly and indirectly. So yeah, we'll see what happens, but Arsenal are doing everything they can.
They are doing everything they can, and we'll stick with another team that's doing everything they can, Man City. They cantered to a win away at Nottingham Forest at the City Ground, and really just, well, this game was just suffocated. We obviously watched this game together, the same as the game before, and you just said as soon as you saw Kovacic coming on for Doku, you was like, yeah, that's it. Pep didn't have control in that first half. There's a midfielder on. This will be a boring 1-0, 2-0. And you were right, Stan, it was 2-0. And City doing everything they can at the minute. All they can do is keep winning. And if they do keep winning, they will be champions. And they've got 4 games left. I believe the next game they've got is Wolves at home on Saturday. Then Fulham away, Spurs away, and West Ham at home. So they've got a couple of tricky fixtures in there, but again, at this point in the season, Stan, you were right. A lot of players' minds will be on the beach.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I'm only really looking at the Spurs game, to be honest. City've got an awful league record, an awful record at the new Spurs ground, but they did finally win there this season in the FA Cup, knocking them out. But they've not actually scored a league goal there in 3 or 4 visits, and City drew at home this season to Spurs too, with Kulusevski scoring a late equaliser. So they've not actually got the greatest recent record against Spurs. They've, no matter who Spurs have got and who the manager is and the form they're in, they tend to cause City problems. And like I say, that is a huge game there, not only for City but for Spurs too, in terms of potentially finishing fourth, not fifth, with us knowing that it probably isn't going to be enough, or almost certainly isn't going to be enough for the Champions League. It's a game that Spurs, despite what the side effects will be, or maybe, you know, Spurs have to go home in that game. So, but yeah, for City, I mean, as soon as that second goal went in, I think City had one shot in the next 25 minutes. So it was one of those classic City 2-0 up, 1,000 passes, you know, one shot for every 1,000 passes that they kind of complete kind of job, and no injuries, go off the pitch with a clean sheet, 2 goals and 3 points. And look, that's City's 5th Premier League win in a row. Like you say there, they've got 4 left. They won 12 in a row last season to win it against Arsenal. And who would put it past them winning 9 in a row and, you know, winning the next four to make it 9 in a row, to make it 4 in a row, because it doesn't actually matter at all what Arsenal do. Arsenal can win the remaining games 10-0 each. But if City win all of theirs 1-0, it'll be going to City by a point. So Arsenal are trying the best, but it's, as we know, it's in City's hand, and like I say, nobody would put it against them to just win the next 4 league games and go on to win the Premier League title again. So, but yeah, Kurt, you mentioned there it was chaos there in that first half, or chaos for a City game, should we say. I mean, me and you have become accustomed to chaos this season. It wasn't as chaotic as some of our team's games, but for a Guardiola City game, it was chaos, with Chris Wood missing 2 sitters in the first half. I mean, was it classic Pep? I mean, I suppose when that Kovacic sub came on, it was always just going to be a standard City win after that, and I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, like you said, when we was in person watching it, I think the lack of control in that first half really scared Pep, and it was a side, obviously, this season that are fighting for the lives, and with the points deduction, they'd probably be safe, and we'd probably be sat here three or four games left going, all the teams that have come up have gone back down if everyone doesn't get a points deduction. And I think that's fair to say. I don't think that's the most outrageous thing to say there. Yeah, but I know the level of opposition is really good here for Nottingham Forest, but I didn't think that they were... They just didn't punch as hard as they should have for a team being where they are in terms of they knew how they had to play, the absorb and counter, but there's only so much you can do when you've got Chris Wood up front and you've got two absolutely rapid wingers that are always just going to outpace him with the ball at the feet. And that's where they suffer by not playing a 1 year, and it really does hurt him, and he's obviously a huge player for them. And then Wood misses the chances that he does. So I think City in the first half definitely rode the luck. I think that on another day, Forest potentially do get something from this game, given the chances that City give up. And it's just one of them. When you look in, you look in. And like you said, five wins in a row for Pep and City. And it almost feels like business as usual. And I hate to say I told you so, and it's not done yet, listeners. But City have not gone on their run yet. I remember reiterating that to you all throughout the season. I said they've still not gone on the run, and now they're in it. And I just think that, like a well-oiled machine, they are just going to keep going. And they'll probably win the double this season. And that going from a treble to a double is probably, in Pep's eyes, seen as failure. But definitely is still a massive achievement in English football for Pep and Man City if they can win the FA Cup and the Premier League, given the fact that for 95% of the season, Stan, it's been a three-horse race.
Yeah, and it's no longer a three-horse race, shall we say, in a team that won't be winning the Premier League or the FA Cup or the Europa League is Liverpool. I mean, the wheels have well and truly fallen off in the last couple of weeks, which for myself, I will say, is absolutely fantastic to see. A loss in midweek at Goodison, 2-0. The first loss at Goodison since Mikel Arteta scored the winner, and he's now managing a team to potentially win the title. So that shows you how long. But Everton massively deserved that win. Liverpool just didn't show up. And again at the weekend, West Ham 2-2. And maybe Liverpool slightly edged that one. But again, in terms of, you know, you're not going to win the title with performances like that. And West Ham probably in the end deserved a point, all things considered. So the wheels are well and truly falling off there. I think they're 5 points off Arsenal with three games left. So, you know, barring a complete capitulation by not only Arsenal but City, who are both above them, it would basically mean both of them losing all the games and Liverpool winning all of theirs, which just isn't going to happen, is it? So it looks like third in the League Cup for Jurgen Klopp in his farewell season, which is the same as what Ten Hag got in his first. So them two can walk off in the sunset with the third place in the Carabao Cup, Energy Drink Cup medals when they both probably leave the end of the season. So, yeah, it's great to see for me, knowing that Liverpool have gone from a quad to a Han Solo within the space of, you know, 2-3 weeks. And it might also be nice, Cook, for some people who like the drama, to see Mo Salah saying, "If I speak, I'll start a fire," to the press mix zone. I mean, what do we make of this little situation between Salah and Klopp?
Honestly, I love it. I genuinely love it because it's supposed to be Klopp's like last dance. It's supposed to be the love story is getting its final farewell, the cherry on top, and they're going out with a League Cup against the youngest side in the league, which I think for someone who has a perceived legacy as Klopp does, I think is incredibly poor. And we joke around with our Liverpool mates and say, well, at least our managers are sacked. They don't quit on our clubs like proper managers. But I'm half saying that in tongue in cheek, but I'm half saying that like being serious. Like, that's your mentality. Like, you're tired. What? Like, I know it's like one thing, but you paid accordingly. And I'm not being funny or anything, Klopp. If you want to be a big boy and sit at the table, it's all about longevity. It's not about winning one Premier League and one Champions League, which, don't get me wrong, that's incredible. But Roberto Di Matteo's won a Champions League and Claudio Ranieri's won a Premier League. I'm not saying that that's anyway me being derogatory about those wins, but they are facts, and it's to put it into context, they are on the same amount. And I think for a manager that's perceived and idolised the way he is, I think that he has really gone out with a whimper at Liverpool, and I really think that that's fair to say, because I think that he personally has let Liverpool down in terms of when he announced this thing. I think that, yeah, it might have given him the extra boost to win the Carabao, but look what it's done towards the end of the season. Him and Salah are at odds with each other because he's benched him, because he's been out of form, and he doesn't want to be there anymore, really, by the looks of it. Klopp definitely doesn't want to be there. Salah's arguing with him. You've got players like Darwin Nunes trying to break it up. And it's just so un-Liverpool. And for someone who really despises them, like we do, it's perfect. But for Liverpool fans, they're thinking, how has this happened? It was all so rosy, literally, 18 months ago. We were all so happy and we never thought that this would end. And now Klopp's leaving. It looks like Salah potentially will leave. Van Dijk will potentially leave. Liverpool's spine is gone. And that now with the new guy coming in, Stan Arne Slot, who a lot of people don't know a lot about, just because of the league he's been operating and the Eredivisie isn't televised very well in this country. But how much of a challenge does he have going into Liverpool to put the fire out that Klopp's leaving on the way out?
Yeah, it's a huge challenge. I wouldn't say it's an impossible one. I don't think it's like replacing Wenger or Fergie at all, just because of the longevity and the number of titles and things that they had. I mean, Klopp's been there a decade, but like you said, look, I'm not even tongue-in-cheek, he's won one league and one Champions League, so... I don't think it'll be that crazy to maybe at least get close to matching what he won in his 10 years. But it's going to be a big challenge either way, even just replacing the personality and the character and the love. He's almost like a godlike figure on that side of the world. So it's going to be huge for him and me. I've seen some people going, oh, Salah and Van Dijk need to leave because Arne Slot needs to be given the chance to build his team and have a fresh slate. But if that was me, I'd be looking at it the other way. I mean, I've seen United lose Ferdinand, Vidic, Giggs, Scholes, I think. And then I think Evra went the year after whilst David Moyes was there. I saw so many huge names leave. and that would have affected Moyes. I honestly think, okay, he might not have won the league. But I think if some of those players would have at least been there in the squad to help tide it over, to help with the rebuild and the transition. Because look, at the end of the day, if Arne Slot's successful or not, Van Dijk and Salah aren't going to be there in 3 years at Liverpool, whether Arne Slot is or isn't. So if he's going to build a team, he's got to build it without them in mind, but potentially with them in mind in terms of the immediate transition and guiding that across. So if that was me, I wouldn't be thinking, oh no, Salah, Van Dijk leave, I want to come in and have my own clean slate. I'd be thinking the opposite and going, stay, help me rebuild in this moment. You two are probably my two best players. I would say so, with Alisson. But stay, let me get some bodies in, and whilst they develop, you leave in maybe a year, 2 years, and then they'll be ready then. And maybe the likes of Konate, Szoboszlai, Trent might be a bloody midfielder by then. Darwin might have found out how to finish. So you don't know. You don't know what's going to come through. Conor Bradley could be, you know, one of the best fullbacks in the division. So you don't really know what's going to happen, but if that's me, I'm keeping him there, if not just for the squad harmony and experience and helping me tide over and as little change as possible, really. But, I mean, how do you think they'll do? Do you think it will be, they'll just crack on? Will they do a City? And they've got, do you think they've got the setup now, a la City, to the point where it doesn't matter too much who the manager is because a lot of it's data-led and upstairs? Or do you think that we'll see a drop-off similar to Moyes at United, where they just won't recapture the feeling?
It's hard to say, but given the track record of Liverpool managers in the past that have got more time than they probably deserved, Arne Slot's probably going to get a fair crack at it, whether they do really poorly or not. They've got to really, really fall down the table for him to get the sack, and especially when they've had people in the past, obviously like Brendan Rodgers, who's had it for a little bit, and people like him, where they've definitely outstayed the welcome. And even people like Dalglish, for example, he was probably in the job too long, and I know he was only on like a temporary basis that went to like semi-permanent, but they've got previous, and I do think that that's a good thing, but it's also a double-edged sword, giving people time for the sake of time, because if it doesn't work, then at what point do you call it a day? Because Liverpool have to rebuild now. All the front line got to similar ages, and now it's showing. We spoke about it on the pod, I want to say 2 years ago, when they all started getting older. And like you said, Mane at the time left for Bayern Munich, and now obviously he's in Saudi Arabia. Firmino is obviously in Saudi as well. Salah's got them links. And It's a similar story with the midfield. They had a complete midfield clear out, got a brand new midfield for 75% of the season. It looked incredible. And then they got absolutely battered in the Europa League. And then they just completely lost their heads in the Prem. And before a ball was kicked, they should have won that Europa League, no questions asked. That squad is far superior than any other squad in that Europa League, even one that's dropped down from the Champions League. So I'm really, really worried in terms of like, if I was a Liverpool fan, I'd be thinking it could be a while there before we're competing for major honours. And when I say major honours, I mean Champions League, Premier League. FA Cup is probably third after that and then Carabao. But I would say for major honours, just because I think they're at the end of a cycle and there's no one they've got right now. And I think, you know what? You're fit every single week and you're a 7 out of 10 every week for them. Like, even like Jota, who I really, really like, very good player. He's never fit. Trent always has these weird little injuries. Robertson looks a shadow of the player he used to be. And I think there's players in that team, especially in the back line stand, quickly, if I don't know if you agree, they've got no one pushing them for a place other than Bradley now for Trent, you could say.
Yeah, no, I agree. You've got Bradley for Trent. And I think it's a matter of time before he ends up being a midfielder. You've got maybe Konate centrally, but after that, I think Quansah probably... quite a low ceiling, might be a decent squad centre-half. Van Dijk, like we've said, might go. Matip has had an ACL, there's probably a chance he goes this summer. And Tsimikas hasn't taken his moments when he's played. So there's quite a rebuild there, and it almost seems like it's all coming to a head at the same time in terms of Klopp going and these players that have been so important over the Klopp era, shall we say, are all coming up to an age that probably they need to be looking at replaced this summer, or at least the summer after, like you say, with them hitting that 30 landmark. So we'll see. I personally hope they struggle and sit in bottom half and never see the light of day again. But I don't think they will. I think they've got too much money. I think Michael Edwards coming back as well, just lastly, is a big pull for them. I think his brains, we've seen him help Klopp build that team that's just won a Champions League and a Premier League. I think if he can lead on it and the manager's more of a head coach than a manager and let Michael Edwards do his thing, then the transition could be a lot smoother.
Right, listeners, that music can only mean one thing. It is, of course, the bet of the week. We're in game week 34 of the Barclays, and unfortunately there is only 3 o'clocks this week, listeners, so we are going to have to include the 5:30 kickoff. So starting us off, Brentford versus Fulham, London derby. I'm going to go both teams to score in this one. Then Burnley host Newcastle, bit of a weird one, but Burnley double chance, they're fighting for their lives there, Burnley. Then Sheffield United, already relegated, they host Nottingham Forest. I'm going to go for a Forest win away at Sheffield United. And then last but not least, Man City hosting Wolves at the Etihad. I'm going to go Man City, both teams to score, result at home to Wolves. So just to recap the bet of the week, Brentford versus Fulham, I'm going to go both teams to score. Then Burnley versus Newcastle, I'm going to go Burnley double chance. Sheffield United versus Nottingham Forest, I'm going to go Nottingham Forest away win. And then last but not least, Manchester City, both teams to score, result at home to Wolves. And Stan, what can listeners do with that?
They can shove it up the rackers. Hello and welcome back. We're going to play a quick game of football, friends. Just me and Cook, just one-to-one. Now we'll go straight into it. Player number one. This guy started in 2005, Cook. And he played for one club before joining Tony Kroos in 2009. Then he played with Patrice Evra, Mehdi Benatia, Frankie de Jong, and Christian Eriksen. And then after that club with Eriksen, he played for 3 more clubs, where he's currently still at the last club and playing. So he is active. A rare one for me, but this guy is active. So they're the 5 main clubs. So starting in 2005, Toni Kroos in 2009, Patrice Evra, Mehdi Benatia, Frankie de Jong, Christian Eriksen, 3 more clubs, and he's still active at the 3rd club of those 3.
Tony, were you at Leverkusen or Bayern? That's the question. Yep, so I'll stay away from that. Evra, post-2009. Ooh, tricky. Juventus, Evra? No, because he would have played. I think he would have played with Benatia at Juventus, so Evra maybe at Man United. You know what I'm going to do, Stan?
Go on.
I'm going to say 4 Toni Kroos. Is this Bayern Munich Toni Kroos or is this Bayer Leverkusen Toni Kroos?
It's Bayer Leverkusen. So you've used your 50-50, so you've got your substitute where you can obviously sub a name out and I'll give you a very obvious name that pretty much gives you the club. And then we've got year, so you can ask me for any of the other 4 and I'll tell you.
I know who this is.
Well, go on.
King Arturo.
It is King Arturo. Well done. Going to tell us why?
Yeah, Kroos at Leverkusen. It's that iconic picture where it's like, did you know these two played for this club at the same time?
Yes.
With them two hugging, which is like the one that people don't know about. Patrice Evra, I would like to say, was at Juve.
It was.
Benatia, Juve again?
Bayern.
You forget he even played at Bayern Munich.
Played at Bayern, yeah.
You know, yeah, bloody hell, yeah. I knew Vidal played out there for 2 or 3 seasons. But yeah. Nacho, Jesus, forgot about that. De Jong, when he had that little stint at Barcelona. Christian Eriksen at Inter Milan when he was on his final lap tour of Serie A. And he currently plays out in Chile for... Independiente? No, it's not.
No.
Who is it? Oh, I've seen that video of him riding around on a horse.
He plays for the club that he started at, which is Colo-Colo. They're in Chile.
I should have gone.
So he started there, and he looks like he's probably going to finish there too. So yeah, he's still active, and it is, of course. Arturo Vidal, well done, Kurt. That was nice and quick. I'm very impressed with that one. Because there's a lot of names there in the middle, especially that has played for so many clubs during that period of time. So it could have been many routes. Player number 2. So this guy started in 2004. And he played with Igor Biscan in 2008. And then in the next player he played with was Edin Dzeko. Pierre-Emile Højbjerg. Raul Jimenez. Blaise Matuidi. And then he played for 2 more clubs and retired.
Okay, again, played with some absolute stallions of the game. Blaise Matuidi, who basically went to Inter Miami at the end of his career to venture into the business world of not football and just chill on South Beach, which I can totally respect. Jimenez played for more clubs than you think. Played for Atletico Madrid as well, that a lot of people forget. Højbjerg had time at Southampton again. A lot of people forget that. So associate him a lot with Tottenham. Dzeko, now, this is the one. 2008 with Biscan, and then in between Dzeko and Højbjerg. I'm gonna stay away from that because I don't really know a lot about Biscan. So what I'll do, I will use, Stan, my 50-50 on... Is it Pierre-Emile Højbjerg?
I see you want to... Yeah, you want to change that?
I would like to do 50-50 on Højbjerg and see is that Southampton or Tottenham Hotspur or neither.
It is neither. So it's if you know where Southampton got him from.
Which I don't. Big L.
Okay. It's a big club.
Big L.
You could be extra cheeky and just substitute him out now if you wanted.
No, the listeners won't.
If you don't know.
The listeners won't respect me.
No, that's true. So you've got substitute and year left. If you want a year of another guy or, like I say, sub any of the others out for a more obvious name.
Well, I'll be tactical there and I'll ask for the year of Blaise Matuidi.
And he played with him in 2017. Yeah, 17-18 was his first season with the Blaze.
I respect that. Okay. So Højbjerg not in the Premier League. The clues are bad. Højbjerg is not in the Premier League, and Matuidi in 2017.
Correct.
Yeah. Who has played? Dzeko, you keep looking at me, Dzeko, but I've got to stay away from you.
Oh,
Yeah, I know where they got him from now, sorry. Dzeko, that is.
But go on.
Wolfsburg.
Well done. Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, so the Dzeko one, Wolfsburg, Højbjerg, I want to say he was in Germany.
He was in Germany.
I don't know who for, but I'm just...
The biggest club in Germany.
Oh, he was, wasn't he? Fucking hell.
He was. Bayern Munich, yeah, he came through Bayern.
Oh my God, he was.
He was.
Wow, you fucking hell. How have I forgot that?
Yeah, he was. He was. That's where Southampton got him from.
Jesus. Wild. So, yeah, right. Okay, I'm going to have a stab, listeners. So, yeah, so Dzeko, right, okay, like I said, started in 04, don't know anything about Biscan, really. Dzeko at Wolfsburg, Højbjerg at Bayern Munich now, narrowing it down. Jimenez, blank, possibly Wolves, though, but also possibly Atletico Madrid. And then Matuidi at 2017, which I think is Paris Saint-Germain. So I'm going to say this is Julian Draxler.
No. It's not Julian Draxler.
Oh.
Matuidi wasn't at PSG.
Was he not, though?
He wasn't, no, he'd left.
Dan, will you use my final lifeline? Because it's killing me that I don't know where Blaise Matuidi was between Paris Saint-Germain and Inter Miami. This is absolutely killing me. So, can you please replace Raul Jimenez, please?
Yes, I will replace Raul Jimenez with Diego Godin.
Oh, Juve?
It was Juve.
Oh, it was Juve.
So, you've got the path there.
You were there.
Apart from the first one.
Okay. All right. 2004, Biscam, Dzeko at Wolfsburg, Højbjerg at Bayern, Jimenez, blank. Oh, well, it's not Jimenez now, it's Godin. Godin.
You got Wolfsburg.
That means Atleti now. That path is Atleti.
So you've got Wolfsburg, Bayern, Atleti, Juve. Two more clubs and he's retired. It's a great name, this guy. Another guy linked to United often, and I would have liked this guy, actually, to be honest.
Oh, fucking, I'm an idiot. I'm an idiot. I don't know how it's only just came to me. Is this Mario Gomez?
No. He is Mario.
Mario. Oh, fuck's sake. Oh, it's Mandzukic. Right.
It is Mandzukic.
I can't believe I'm only just getting this now, but it's Mario Mandzukic.
It is Mario Mandzukic.
I hit the post with the other Mario.
He did, Mario. I mean, he's played for some big clubs too, but no, it's Mario Mandzukic, yeah.
Oh, I thought Dzeko at Wolfsburg, they played together at Wolfsburg maybe.
Yeah, potentially.
Højbjerg at Bayern.
Yeah.
Mitsuidi.
Might have gone there afterwards. Yeah, yeah. No, it's Mario Mandzukic, great journeyman of Europe's top clubs. Mario Mandzukic.
They're safe. Thank God. Stan, his second favourite team in the league, just because of the fans. Everton are safe. Also, ironically, the team that they played at the weekend are also safe with that. And now, Stan, your beloved Everton have stayed in the Premier League for another season. Obviously, we've been so wax lyrical over Sean Dyche over the course of the season, and now there's nothing to worry about. So it's now six have become four for that final two spots.
Yeah, it's really heating up. I mean, I mentioned last week that potentially it could be six teams that can go down, but like you say, it's been cut to four now with three games left, and Everton are staying up, which is great. I really like Everton. I like the fans more than anything. I think they're brilliant. I think they are Hollywood, should we say. They are blockbuster. So, you know, whether they're doing well, I enjoy them, and if they're doing badly, I enjoy them just as much with the Goodison booze, which is... know, brilliant, and I wish could be my ringtone if I was clever enough to do that. So Everton stay up, though, and I mean, after a shocking result against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, they end up winning, I believe, three games in a row, and all at home, including that Merseyside derby sandwich there. So huge 9 points there for Everton, and not only does it mean they've won three in a row, which feels like probably the first time they've done that in a very long time, but it secures Premier League survival with three games left, and unlike the last few seasons where I think it's pretty much gone to the last game, if not the penultimate game of the season. So yeah, I'm glad Everton are up there. I think Sean Dyche has done so well with some of the injuries and the takeover situation with that. Is it 7-7 group and you've got all the points deductions that have been going on? It's minus 10, it's minus 6, and now they've got another minus 2 and things like that. He's just rallied the troops, gone 4-4-2 or 4-4-1-1. Had so many different combinations of players, I think, apart from pretty much Pickford, Branthwaite, Tarkowski, which has been the mainstay, and I think they've conceded the least in the bottom half of the table. It's goals where they really struggle, but after that, I mean, they've had so many combinations of strikers. They've played Chimiti at the weekend, they've had Beto up there, they've had Calvert-Lewin up there, Onana, Gay, Garner, Gomez, so many different midfields, but he's done it. He's figured it out. I think he's a great manager. I mean, we said before he went there that Sean Dyche, I think, would make a great Everton manager. I know they're a little bit 50-50 on him, but I think we've seen with time with Dyche, I think if he's allowed to kind of do it, I think he is defence first and solid first, but we saw with Burnley, he got to the Europa and they had some, you know, they were playing some decent football at the time. It wasn't just 4-4-2 sitting and whatever. They had, I mean, the likes of buddy Stephen Defoe was bossing the midfield for them at one point, which a lot of people forget, but yeah, I like Everton. I like Dyche. I also like Thomas Frank and Brentford. I think it's great for them that they've stayed up again. Another good story with them getting promoted a few years ago, and they're probably going to get a huge sum of money in the summer, you would think, with Ivan Toney leaving, despite him only having a year left. I can see the likes of Chelsea, Arsenal, even United, you know, those top six clubs all sniffing around a guy who's in his prime and could potentially, you know, is an England international and could potentially be part of the Euro 2024 squad and hopefully a Euro 2024 winner by the time he comes back. So, you know, they could be looking at maybe the best part of 70, 80 million if all things go well for them. So, you know, it could be a huge moment for Brentford, like you say, despite losing, you know, with all the other results going their way, they still end up staying up with three games to Spurs. So they can start booking the summer holidays knowing that they'll be playing Premier League football next year. And just going on to the four teams, Court, I mean, I feel like I ask you this every week, but it changes all the time. Bottom three, do you think it stays how it is? You mentioned before about the promoted clubs going down. Do you think it stays how it is? Or do you think the late resurgence from Burnley, we've seen them put some results together. I feel like they've not had many losses in the last month or so, and they got a draw at Old Trafford at the weekend. They were fully deserving at that point. Luton have got two of the last three games at home. We know how important that is at Kenilworth Road, and it's against bottom half opposition. But above both of them, so you got Forest. It's in their hands. Look, if Forest win the next three games, they'll be a Premier League club. So Sheffield United have gone. Unfortunately, the Blades will be playing Championship football next season. But Cook, who will be the next two?
Oh, like you said, we feel like we're saying this every week, but like, again, like you said, it does change frequently, and unfortunately, Stan, it looks like the fire's gone out in Luton, and it looks like they've maybe maxed out everything they can and have exhausted every accessible bit of energy that they've had over the course of the season, really. I think that other than Sheffield United, they've conceded the second most in the league, which, if you put in numbers like that, they've conceded 70 goals, and then after them, Sheffield United have conceded 97. So that's an extra 20 on top of that, but it just shows like why they're down there. And obviously Morris has done so well up front, given the absolute scraps that he has to feed off most games, and Ross Barkley's looked really good, and Tegan Mengi has also looked really good for them, and Alfie Doherty. So Luton can definitely hold their head high regardless of what happens this season. I'm pretty sure they've only spent about 5 million as well, so for them to stay up would be an absolute miracle. And I just think that I've got a weird feeling about Burnley at the minute. I don't know why, but for some reason, they've just decided to turn it on. And I think with Forest just being so dysfunctional, and especially with an owner like Marinakis, I really wouldn't be surprised if they went back down. I really wouldn't, just due to the sheer inconsistency of form and just inconsistency in the boardroom. But I'm going to go out there and say, Burnley, stay up. Why not? But Stan, the last team we're going to talk about, obviously I briefly mentioned Luton Town then and said that the spark has gone out, and Rob Edwards, Stan, if they do go down, do you think he'll be sort of any suitors following the upcoming season?
Yeah, definitely. I'll be surprised if he's not a Premier League manager at some point next season. Maybe not from the off, because, you know, teams will sort other things out, but as we know, teams panic. And despite him not staying up, I think it'll be a name that people will look at, because, you know, they've, like you said, I mean, they've been greater than the sum of the parts, most definitely. They've spent such little money, but they've been a force to be reckoned with at times. Like I say, there's not many teams have gone to Kenilworth Road, and I'm including the best teams in the league, and all of them have come away from that ground knowing that they've been in a game. And I think that the teams lower down, Rob Edwards making the home ground a bit of a cauldron in a way, somewhere difficult to go, that can be so important in being the difference between finishing 17th and 18th. And look, I agree with you, Colt, they might be running out of steam, but I think with two of the last three games being at home and not against bottom half opposition, like we've said, must be the key phrase of this pod so far, is that the heads will be on the beach. But they might be. Luton have got, like I say, it's a cauldron at Kenilworth, especially when the fans are up for it. It wouldn't surprise me to see them get 6 points out of the last nine, and then obviously that away game, you never know what happens. But I could see them winning both of those home games if the other teams don't turn up. And not only that, but Burnley play Nottingham Forest on the last game of the season. Now, Luton play at home in the last game of the season. So if them two end up drawing and Luton end up winning, those 2 points could be absolutely vital. So, it's going to be big, although I do agree, weirdly, despite them being the highest out of the three, I actually look at Luton and Burnley and see them as more likely at staying up than Forest. It just doesn't seem like good vibes there at the moment. Burnley really seems to have sorted their act out. They look a lot more solid, and they look like, you know, they're attacking in the right moments rather than being so open. You know, they look a lot tougher to beat. I think bringing in Muric, like we've said a few times, Cook was a bit of a masterstroke, really, but a very obvious one too. And I look at Burnley and Luton as more likely to stay up than Forest, which is saying a lot considering they're the highest out of the three.
Genuinely, and just as we're finishing off on this relegation roundup, to put it into context how good Burnley have been, they have only lost one in the last eight, and that was coming off the back of a run of losing four on the spin. So credit where it's due there with company, and he's almost got his ego out of the way and put it in the corner and said, you know what, I might have spent 25 million on this kid, but Muric is the guy that got us to the dance here, and I probably should have gone with him and invested that 25 million in a front man. And I'm not just saying this because he's on loan from Chelsea and I've seen him in bits and bobs, but they look a much better side when they play with a focal point in Dakhtar Fofana, and they can actually play off that and get other players like Goodmanson and Bryn Larson, into the games, and they've looked much better for it. They genuinely have, and they look like someone who can run in behind now, as opposed to you don't associate Burnley with that at all. And now you talk about home games, Turf Moor, when they're playing well, they can really get behind them. But coming off the back of beating a relegation rival in Sheffield United, going to Old Trafford, getting a point, drawing at home to Brighton, and unfortunately for them, getting beat by Everton, it's Jekyll and Hyde form at the wrong time in them last four. But now, one defeat in the last eight has really righted the wrongs from earlier on in the season. But you kind of got to think, is it too little too late? And should he probably have done this in like the end of the transfer window or March or even a couple of weeks earlier? Because it might be too little too late. But Vincent Kompany's got no danger of losing his job. And yeah, he's got enough credit in the bank winning the championship last season for them to potentially even go down and bounce back up. So even if they go down, I know it'll seem like the end of the world for a few Burnley fans, but at the end of the day, it's probably not the end of the world, given the fact that apart from the goalkeeper, they've not spent a lot of money either. So it'll be really interesting for the last few weeks of the season. And they've got Newcastle at home, Spurs away, which is a very difficult game. And then they host Nottingham Forest, like you said earlier on in the pod, for the last game of the season. So huge, huge implications at the top and the bottom of the Premier League.